We will continue with Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, really twins. When Nixon fell down into disgrace, he only moved right next door to David Rockefeller in New York City, and Ronald Reagan is the standard bearer of what Richard Nixon left behind. Theodore White, the great historian who writes about the making of presidents, I say great historian with tongue in cheek, said in quotes, "California is a state with the oddest political structure in the Union. There is no party organization in the older American sense. California politics squirm with a complexity and intrigue that defies reasonable analysis." He wrote that in February of 1956. I take issue with people like Theodore White and praise men like Charles Spears, and there aren't many of them like Charles Spears, because these complexities and intrigues do not defy analysis. These people that are involved in this great drama of history have names and places, meeting places, where they go, and they can be checked out, who they see or what they do. And the man who's catapulted into a position of President of the United States, such as Ronald Reagan, has roots. And if you look for them, you can find them, and you can find then who he's going to serve if he gets into office. Reagan didn't come out of a vacuum. Earl Warren didn't come out of a vacuum in California from Kern County, Bakersfield, become Chief Justice. He was discovered by Murray Chotiner, with links to organized crime, who discovered Richard Nixon. And the same people that funded Nixon against Jerry Voorhees and Helen Douglas, then Nixon was vice president, they had Ronnie Baby waiting in the sidelines to put into the next position. This explanation of Theodore White refuses to get into the world of organized crime, of narcotics, of the links of people like Robert Vesco, the arms merchants, the influence of Randolph Hearst, and broadcasting and propaganda that defy the simplicity that these people are simply complex and that we never can find the truth about them. It's all there if you want to see it. In 1960, this was just 4 or 5 years before Ronald Reagan decided to become governor, the John Birch Society was growing. Again in California, the roots of the Birch Society. It's true that Robert Mayhew, who worked closely with the Hughes Organization, CIA, counterintelligence, and FBI, was meeting in New York to hire John Roselli, Sam Giancana, and the mobsters to work for the CIA with an assassination team. But Mayhew moved west, and Mayhew worked for Howard Hughes, and Howard Hughes' offices, the Hughes aircraft, were in California. Even though he moved into Vegas, or the operation moved into Vegas, the Romaine Street headquarters were the Hughes headquarters, and California was the branch of his counterintelligence activity. And Dr. Fred Schwartz moved to California, I believe he was from Australia, led his Christian anti-communism crusade at the Hollywood Bowl. 12,000 people came to California. The strong Christian crusade that's developing in Texas now, with people behind the assassination of John Kennedy that covered it up, Leon Jaworski and Gerald Ford, John Connolly, the Clint Murchison family, these various people, Clement Stone, behind the Christian crusade, got the impetus from California, again, with Fred Schwartz and the Birch Society and John Roselli. A member of the Birch Society, Mr. Oliver, was in Boston giving a speech saying that all the Jews in America and the world should be vaporized. But Oliver worked closely with Roselli in California, and in 1962, Ronald Reagan was speaking for Roselli and beginning to be known as a far-right fundamentalist at these anti-communist crusades, these Christian crusades. Ronald Reagan was working for Roselli's campaign, giving a speech called "What's at Stake?" He was Henry Salvatore, the oil man that was behind Nixon's career, began to fund Reagan, a man named A.C. Rubel from Union Oil, George Murphy, the actor working for Technicolor, and Patrick Frawley. The right wing in California ranged from the extreme fundamentalists and the church to the Minutemen and the Nazi parties. Salvatore was working a long time with Nixon and Reagan. He supported Schwartz and the anti-communist crusade. The Birch Society was supporting Billy James Hargis and Gerald Smith. And Walter Knott from Knott's Berry Farm was behind the Birch Society and Hargis. Ronald Reagan's support came from the fundamentalist Christian group that were favoring apartheid in South Africa. They favor sending nuclear weapons to South Africa right now. They are very anti-Semitic. They are anti-black. They are very closely associated with the Nazis and the Minutemen. Spencer Roberts, the association that represented Ronald Reagan, had a problem in 1964. They admitted they had to sell Reagan as a moderate while he was linked to the right-wing extremists. So that while he represented Rousselet and the Birch Society and Representative Bell in Congress, they had to handle Reagan's campaign for governor and push into power a man. Never before did we have an actor as a governor in California, and never before a person without experience in public office. Their reason for taking the case of Reagan was the extenuating circumstance of his mobility and exposure through General Electric. Reagan came from Tampico, Illinois, a little town. He went to a college of 250 students, and some of his Christian fundamentalism may be caused by the fact that he was poor, his father was an alcoholic, and the church gave him his education. He didn't go to any of the top schools, the New England schools like Lyndon Johnson. There was this I did it for myself versus the Ivy League. The polished East Coast people looked down on these Western boobs and these self people that brought themselves up by their bootstraps. No matter how hard it was, Reagan was in there washing dishes and a lifeguard at the swimming pools and so forth. He was bringing home a drunk father, an alcoholic. And his mother had a sense of drama. She loved poetry and plays, and she worked hard. And he went to Hollywood in 1937. He graduated from this religious college, and a person, Joy Hodges, a singer from Des Moines, Iowa, took him to Hollywood. Now, his career catapulted so fast from being a radio announcer. He was working with the Cubs in Chicago and then went to Catalina Island. But I don't know anything about Joy Hodges, but she took him to a man named Bill Minkeljohn in 1937. Now, 37 historically was the time that Hitler was really swinging. He'd been in power 4 years. It was 2 years before he invaded Poland. It was a time when the United States was very pro-Nazi. Very many public officials were for Hitler. Even people like Lindbergh, our great American hero, didn't think we could win the war, that we should become German, the British could become German. A lot of people were sympathetic to Adolf Hitler, and Hollywood was run by a group of moguls who thought that any improvement in wages in the studios meant communism or socialism, and they were violently anti-communist. And Reagan began to line up. He lost what was a liberal state of mind when he first came to Hollywood. He began to line up with the far right wing when he saw that his movie career was declining, that he was useful to the extreme right wing. But he was taken to a Minkeljohn for a test where he landed immediately $200 a week, which is interesting, and made headlines in the Social, in the Register in Des Moines. Dutch Reagan, local sports announcer, signed a long-term contract with Warner Brothers. Now, whether they had eye on Reagan, just as Errol Flynn was a Nazi spy for the Gestapo, whether Reagan worked with people who were later going to use him as a sleeper and watch his rise to power, you know, give him some good movie parts and then swing him to General Electric and push him for a later campaign, whether his career was that consciously followed or not, I don't know. I think we would only know if we know who Joy Hodges was, who her contacts were, and who Bill Minkeljohn was, or whether or not they had any links with purposes later where they could pull Reagan out and use him. Because obviously Reagan never had to know anything or make any decisions, and he was a perfect cover during all these years, well, mind control and the COINTELPRO program and the domestic activities of the intelligence community were going on massively in his state, probably more than any other state in the Union. During the war years, he didn't fight. He made a couple of movies, and he worked at a desk at Culver City. It was called the Culver City Commandos. It was a motion picture unit of the Army Air Corps. They synchronized battle action on the screen, and he signed it off saying, "Bombs away." That's where why he wears that silly veterans hat when he speaks to the veterans organizations, because he had the privilege of watching them being slain on the film and narrating the movies as propaganda, I guess, for better fighters to enlist and go overseas. He made a couple of movies during the war years, Newt Rockne in 1940. That was just prior to our entering the war, in King's Row in 1941. After that, his movies weren't very great, and he was looking for something, and politics seemed to fill the bill. The last movies from 1947 to 57 were bad. In fact, they were terrible. But General Electric used his face and his voice, and they began to sell anti-communism and sell America and use Ronald Reagan for that role. They, as I say, they sent him around the country. He had massive exposure, 135 plants. He met the executives, the personnel. He was a bigwig for the National Association of Manufacturers, which was very pro-fascist and pro-Hitler, and the Chamber of Commerce of the United States. They loved Reagan. He built a national political base later to head the state of California by traveling for General Electric and other corporations. Every year he visited these places, and then they heard his voice on radio. They saw reruns on the television, on the screen. And by 1964, that Goldwater image was too harsh, and in comes Ronald Reagan. His brother Neil sends him to see Goldwater, and then the agencies took over from there. He was active with the House Un-American Activities. He began getting in on the witch hunt. And also, as his politics changed, he divorced Jane Wyman. They were married and had several children, and according to Wyman and the people around him, they said in quotes, "Ronald got involved with a new political obsession." He entered the conservative side of the political spectrum, and that's when Nancy came to his side. She was from the Eastern College, Smith College. She brought the veneer and culture that Reagan needed to accompany him if he was to be the governor of California. And Nancy was the daughter of a doctor in Chicago, Illinois, the part of town that Reagan never got to. Nancy is a strong influence in his life. She gave him, according to some articles, security and support, and established him with the wealthy crowd. She knew how to entertain, she knew who to exclude, and she was that veneer and polish for the other part of town, as I say, the Smith College, that he never could visit or see. And so the combination of the public exposure around the country and the classical, the wife, I guess, pouring the tea on the right tea service and so forth and entertaining the very rich was just what Ronald Reagan needed to be entertained in the homes of the very, very wealthy that he was to represent and get contracts for later in his life. I got interested in Ronald Reagan when I was studying the Kennedy assassination. I mentioned last week or the week before how a man who worked for the CIA and FBI, Mr. Ducote, was also working with agents of Ronald Reagan's in California when Reagan was the governor. The first expose on the Kennedy assassination, the first article or magazine to really come out with an expose, was Ramparts Magazine, November 1964. There's a picture of John Kennedy on the cover in a crossword puzzle. And I helped write that article. David Welsh came to my home, and I purposely left my name out of there because I didn't want to be hassled while I was doing serious research. This was in 1966, and by 1967, according to the FBI reports, or actually they did it in 1966, I was under surveillance. Anyway, in 1968, Ramparts came out with another explosive article on the Kennedy assassination with Jim Garrison's picture on the cover. Bill Turner, a former FBI agent who disliked J. Edgar Hoover's black bag jobs and left the FBI, was a staff writer for Ramparts Magazine. And he helped write the exposés on the Kennedy assassination. And as I mentioned last week, this Jerry Ducote, who was working for the Young Republicans Club, was burglarizing the Ramparts offices and turning over the information to the Central Intelligence Agency. Besides the Oakland Peace Center and the United Farm Workers, they were specifically sending him to steal the papers and working papers from Ramparts where they were exposing the assassination of John Kennedy and writing articles about the involvement of the FBI and the CIA in the Kennedy assassination. When Ducote spoke about the burglaries and the information being given to the CIA and working with members of Reagan's staff in California, who also knew about these burglaries that he was doing, FBI agent Charles Bates denied that the FBI was in any way involved in political burglaries. He made this disclaimer before. He was in San Francisco working for the FBI, but the COINTEL program had come out, and before the news people could, paper people could even attempt to link the FBI to the kidnapping of Patty Hearst, Charles Bates, how he kept his credibility, I don't know, was denying the black bag jobs into Ramparts and other places. But Ducote said he was turning over his information to the FBI in San Francisco. Ducote also burglarized Ramparts magazine for a group called Western Research. They put up the money for his burglarizing those offices when they were doing work into who killed John Kennedy. And he said the money that went into Western Research came from Southern Pacific, from Pacific Gas and Electric Company, from Lockheed Aircraft, from Standard Oil of California. It was a security pool that gathered information about possible subversives. And they were turning this information over to members of Reagan's staff, and Ronald Reagan and his staff knew that these burglaries were taking place and that Ramparts was exposing the role of the FBI and CIA in the killing of John Kennedy. Ronald Reagan was asked in June 1968 about the slaying of Robert Kennedy, because it took place in California, June 14th. Ronald Reagan was interviewed in Indianapolis, Indiana, and he attributed the assassination of Robert Kennedy to violent war in the Middle East that Sirhan was imported. Because he said, we're not a sick society. There's a war in the Middle East, and we should get angry because this man was brought over from the Middle East to kill Robert Kennedy. And then Ronald Reagan said, President Kennedy was done by one who embraced the godless philosophy of communism. It was a communist violence that was brought to our land. He was referring to Oswald, the killer of John Kennedy, because he once lived in the Soviet Union. And he had interviews. Ronald Reagan never hesitated to refer to Lee Harvey Oswald as the communist that killed John Kennedy. Now, one of the men that put Ronald Reagan into power was Patrick Frawley of Technicolor and Schick Razor Blades. And Frawley had a man working for him who was in Army intelligence named Ed Butler. And Ed Butler made the record down in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. Oswald worked for Navy intelligence and for the FBI. And as a cover, appearing pro-Castro because he wanted to get into Cuba and he was told to infiltrate Cuba, he made a record in New Orleans saying that he was a Marxist. It was a kind of a mind control, repetitive, quite brilliant record of Lee Harvey Oswald's I'm a Marxist. And it was produced by Ed Butler. Ed Butler worked with Patrick Frawley. After the assassination, Ed Butler moved to California to be with Frawley and continued the Marxist story that John Kennedy was killed by a communist and a Marxist. And the very man who was behind the escalation of Ronald Reagan's career also was working and hiring Ed Butler, who worked with Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans. Well, Bill Turner, who had worked with the FBI, as I said before, worked with Ramparts, wrote a book on California in particular called Power on the Right, published by Ramparts Press. And in this book, he has many references to the people around Ronald Reagan and the Minutemen and the far right, the buildup in California, and the links to the assassinations that Bill Turner was studying. With his expertise as a former FBI man, he got into groups such as Depew and the Minutemen, into the anti-Castro Cuban group. He helped Jim Garrison in New Orleans, and he was familiar with the very people that were behind the assassination of John Kennedy, members of the Birch Society, Major General Edwin Walker, men that hated John Kennedy, and it was an anti-Catholic as well as an anti-Kennedy mania they had. This Christian crusade is an anti-Catholic crusade. They are linked with Catholics at a certain level, but basically The anti-communist crusade is also anti-Catholic. Ronald Reagan is a Catholic fronting for them, which is interesting enough, but there is also a religious split. While they're using Ronald Reagan as their front, there is this anti-Catholic feeling running through a lot of their literature. And in the book on the power on the right, Bill Turner writes about meetings in California of the anti-Castro Cubans and the Christian Defense League and a man named G. Clinton Wheat, a member of the Klan. And they met with Eugene Hall, who was in Dealey Plaza, part of the Kennedy assassination, and with Oswald's double, a man that was at Sylvia Odio's home, and William Seymour, and various people. They had meetings in Los Angeles with the people, Lawrence Howard and William Seymour. They met in Los Angeles with people that were also associated with Ronald Reagan, and there was a group that incorporated Eugene Bradley and Dr. Stanley Drennan, and they worked with Dr. Carl McIntyre. And when it was time for Eugene Bradley to be brought to New Orleans to be questioned by Jim Garrison, because he met with these anti-Castro Cubans that had talked about the plans to kill John Kennedy, Ronald Reagan refused to extradite Eugene Bradley. He said, I'm not going to send him for a witch hunt, and he, as governor, refused to approve the extradition, even though Bradley worked with the no-name key group, the CIA group, in summer of 63 in Florida. They worked with the Oswald doubles. They worked with the National States Rights Party in Los Angeles. These people were behind the Reagan campaign. They worked hard for the people behind Reagan, and Reagan would not extradite Bradley, even though he had a major contact with people suspected of killing John Kennedy and being very verbal about the desire to kill John Kennedy. The church leagues, the very National Church Council was attacked by the Church League, the American Legion, the American Revolutionary Forces, the Air Force Association, all began to use Ronald Reagan and to have him speak for them. And he became the front man for their criticisms of the welfare system. He gave lectures on Ronald Reagan on the welfare state. He was hitting the welfare state, and the Christian Crusade was attacking any kind of cooperative system that was other than what they called the American free enterprise system. There was no consideration of the poor, the underprivileged, the lame, the blind, the deaf, the mentally retarded. Ronald Reagan served these people well by consolidating agencies and cutting back money for this large middle class, that the same group that Adolf Hitler attacked as soon as he was in power. The people behind Reagan, as I say, were boosting the apartheid of South Africa, and they kept files on everybody. They kept large files. The Church League had 3,000 3x5 cross-index files on organizations that they thought were communist, and they combined these with the FBI files. And they have these data banks going now connected to organizations in Florida. I want to go into later, we won't have time next week, the Wackenhut Corporation. And also, Johnny Meyer, who worked for Howard Hughes, said that the Los Angeles Police Department had a direct computer link into the files in Utah. Anti-war protesters, if you want an abortion, if you signed a petition. I guess if you signed a petition for nuclear energy or demonstrate in California or whatever. All this information is set into data banks for future use. These people aren't going to come down lightly someday. They brag about miles and miles of files. And behind Ronald Reagan's administration, when he was governor in the state, there were photographs of 20, 30,000 people taken by the Army and the CIA and put into these files, which they later admitted they had on microfilm. The image of the calm, cool, friendly, kindly governor was anything but that, but people outside of the state can't realize how much pain was going on, because newspapers across the country didn't really carry very much except for a few shockers such as the Manson family and a few large violences in California. Rockefeller handled the demonstrations at Attica the way he saw fit, by having the guards and the prisoners gunned down and the remaining tortured out in the fields. And Ronald Reagan had his violences. And next week, I'm going to run down some of the California violences and the role Ronald Reagan had in them. The COINTEL program was established. It was very efficient. It began in the late 60s. Reagan was governor in 66, and Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon began this system of keeping track of people, of crashing their skulls, of bringing in the Hell's Angels to break open the peace demonstrations, bring in violence, and to break up what was beginning to be called a flower power, where young people were against the Vietnam War, were against the killing, and had assembled together, left home in large masses to express their feelings and sentiments. They had not known World War One or Two. They didn't know much about it, but instinctively they didn't like the war in Southeast Asia, and they didn't want to fight the war in Southeast Asia. I think that was 80% of the problem, and I think that's why they dropped out of political involvement later, was that they simply didn't want to fight the war, and they didn't want their friends to go. It was less a social historical movement, and that's why it failed, because if they really had feelings for Southeast Asia, they wouldn't have stopped fighting. The suffering is still going on in Cambodia and Laos. And Ronald Reagan financed with a lot of money the Christian Anti-Communism Crusade. The Anti-Communist Voters League poured money into him, the National Strategy Committee of the American Security Council. They were putting money into Ronald Reagan. And somebody asked the question about Ronald Reagan, what will he do when he's governor? He's only an actor. And Henry Salvatore said, I'll tell him what to do. He's got to listen. So that Patrick Frawley and Salvatore and Mr. Rubel and Tuttle and Walter Knott knew that they would tell Ronald Reagan what to do. The American Security Council, the Birch Society, H.L. Hunt, these organizations, plus Spencer Roberts' public relations firm, were to put him into power. The Young Americans for Freedom was forming. The Birch Society was very active. They could write the speeches, and he could attack institutions that had begun to be built up through a legitimate social change during the Roosevelt period and after the war. The changes in society that John Kennedy dreamed about, the civil rights movement, bringing in troops to let the Meredith be educated at a college in the South, to let blacks get education, was to come to a standstill. Next week on the tape, I'm going to talk about Ronald Reagan's role in the education system of depriving us of full education in the state of California, and then it followed suit in other places. The people behind him enjoyed the Hell's Angel at the Oakland Army Induction Center plowing into the peace people and breaking up the crowds, just taking motorcycles and going into them. Governor Ronald Reagan liked that. He said these people were lending aid and comfort to the enemy, and let the Hell's Angels work with the police department to break up those people. That's why Hell's Angel leader Sonny Barger isn't in jail today, because he served the federal government all along. Our time is up now. It's hardly an hour on Ronald Reagan. Next week, I will get back to some more on Ronald Reagan, but for the time being, that's all the time we have. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. You have a good week, and I'll be with you next week.